Yes, it's Pet Chat time. I'm joined by Dr. Fiona Giblin and Cheryl Shaw. Good afternoon, ladies.
How are you, Amanda?
I'm great, thank you.
And it's great to be here, Amanda.
Yes, wonderful. Well, I thought I'd ask first, Fiona, how's your little doggy going?
He's amazing. Banksy is his name. So we've had him, I reckon, 6, maybe 8 weeks now. So as we've talked about previously, the whole 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, I can vouch that that is very much correct. He's going really well, but we're still very much in the process of teaching him what's what and where we wee and where we don't wee and what we eat and what we don't eat.
Right. That's
but
all the fun
he's lots
stuff.
Of fun, yeah.
And so how's the 50 days going?
So backstory, Cheryl, as we've talked about before, apparently you've truly toilet trained your dog if they haven't toileted in the house for 50 days. And every time the number, like the days where he hasn't weed in the house get big, I was like, oh, I've got to tell Cheryl, he's going so well. And then all it takes is a lapse in judgment and focusing on the kids and you haven't realised how much he's drunk and, you know, who last took him out and what time that was, and then we have an accident. But we're doing very well.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'd say probably in the last 3 weeks he's had 2 accidents.
Okay, well, we're getting there.
So we're absolutely getting there. I reckon at 2 weeks was when the penny did drop.
Yep.
You could really tell, okay, this is where I'm supposed to go. This is, you know, we say wee-wees, you know, that's the prompt to do it. Mm-hmm. So at the 2 week mark, we had a big improvement in his understanding / our ability to train ourselves.
Yeah. And I think that's what it comes back to. It's always back to the people in the household.
Absolutely. You know,
going together and sort of working out who's going to take the dog next. Mm. And even if they're going out a bit more regularly, it doesn't really matter, just to make sure we don't get that wee inside.
And I do also find the more people in the house, the more likely he is to either he forgets or we forget. Because as soon as I'm in the house, everyone just assumes
you're going to do
it. I'm going to do it.
That's your role.
Which, you know, comes with path of the course, whatever. But, yeah, it's, you know, if I arrive home, it's like, okay, when did he last go? Who last took him out? Has he done this? Has he done that? Has he been for a walk? All that kind of stuff. So you've almost got to it's like at work when we hand over a patient. Mm. You know, this is what's been happening. This is what they need and this is when they need it. But, yeah, the kids have been really good walking him and picking up after him and feeding him and stuff. But he's a joy.
Yeah, and how about recall? How are we going with coming back?
Next question, Cheryl.
Do you know, there's a great way to teach recall in the house,
yeah.
And particularly that you've got a family of young girls. It's playing hide and seek, but instead of calling hide and seek, it's hide and come. So you teach them that somebody stays with the dog, the other person hides, and then that person that's hiding calls the dog to come. So whether they use their name or come as well, and the dog learns that recall. So that's a great way to do it in the house.
Oh, I like that. We'll try that.
Yeah,
give that a go.
Because often people get out, you know, go outside and they think, oh, no, I just can't let the dog off because he's not going to come back to me. So getting them that they're rewarded, you know, with lots and lots of praise and cuddles and some food when you're playing that hide and seek or hide and come inside is a great one.
That's a good one. And I'm not sure if we were talking about before, we're not quite sure what breed he is.
Yes.
So we, and I certainly agreed when we got him that it was a Labrador cross. He's looking more and more like a full Labrador as he continues to grow and grow and grow. So we're thinking probably that, and his full sibling had a DNA test. And it came back as 100% Labrador.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes.
That's exciting.
Which is fascinating. And initially I was like, no, 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 it can't be, it can't be. And then in the last week, as he just keeps growing and keeps, he's just got that real back half Labrador, like the whole body just wags and is very excited. And friends of ours came around this morning and they'd only seen him about a month ago and said, oh, he's grown a bit. I was like, yeah, I know. And then I told her the story of the full Labrador and she thought it was hysterical because that's what she thinks as well.
Oh, great.
So,
great.
Yeah, we'll see what size he ends up being, but looking like maybe full Labrador, not
bigger,
part
bigger
Labrador.
Than you expected.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but, you know, we wouldn't have him any other way.
Fair enough. Well, Cheryl, what subject do you want to talk about today?
Well, I thought we might talk about a little thing that can happen sometimes when people get their first puppy and they bring their puppy home, they want to, if it's, say, it's a border collie, they think, oh, I've got a great companion to go running with. Now, puppies, when you get them, aren't designed. Their bodies are still growing and they're not designed to do long runs and things like that. They need minimal exercise. And the reason that they do need exercise, don't get me wrong, but they need exercise that doesn't put pressure on their joints. So some puppies, as they're growing, their little growth plates aren't joined together. So when we think of a puppy and its movement, puppies are sort of like all legs and arms and everything wobbles when they walk. That's because nothing's really solid. So all of their joints are still not joined together. And it's not until they get older that things start to solidify or they, you know, join together. And that's when we can start exercising our dogs more. But it's really important to understand that every time a dog, say a puppy, jumps off a bed or jumps out of the car, they're causing a lot of percussion onto their body. And this can cause damage in the short term just while they're puppies, but also it can keep going for when they're older. So we end up with dogs with arthritic conditions, elbow and hip dysplasia, things like that. So it's really important, isn't it, Fiona, that we don't allow them to have that jolting or percussion.
And interestingly, yes, Cheryl, we've seen that a bit at home with Banks. You certainly notice if he is doing a lot of fetch with the kids in the backyard that he'll start to get a little bit sore from just doing too much.
Yeah, that repetitive.
Yeah. And I ended up x-raying him a couple of weeks ago because I just wanted, you know, the vet head was like, oh my gosh, it's all these, you know, really rare, uncommon, terrible things. And his x-rays were totally clear. But interestingly, as you say, you can very much see those growth plates are still open. You can tell he's still got growing to do.
Yeah.
But and we have a few stairs in the house and making a big thing about the kids, just, you know, don't let him jump down the stairs because it is that, as you say, that really harsh, hard movement. And it's onto floorboards too. So yeah, it's not even, you know, out in the backyard.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I often show at preschool, I often show a picture of, you know, how the puppy is sort of put together by x-ray and you can see that nothing is sort of joined. And I always make that association for owners to, you know, you think about a baby's fontanelle on their skull. That's a really good way to think about your puppy when it's not moving properly, when things just seem unco. It's biology. It's not that the puppy's clumsy. It's the way the dog is designed. And as it grows, things do alter. But just making sure that you're not taking these dogs for a long run. And I hear it so often, oh, I've got a companion to go running with. You just need to slow it down. They need exercise on grass, things like that, where they're having, you know, a play and a run around. They certainly do need to still be exercising. But a lot more stimulation in things like playing little games with them, you know, different puzzles that you can get for dogs, because these puppies are full of energy. You need to sort of wear their brain down a little. But physically, we just need to be really cautious. And it is a thing that concerns me when I see young puppies going on long walks. And, just one of those things that I thought we should have a little bit of a think about.
Fiona, you've got some stuff to talk about today.
Yes. So we sort of were given the impression that there is new research showing that up to a third of owners are actually turning to home remedies or the internet before contacting their vet. And then an additional third are asking vets for lower cost treatment options. So I just thought we could have a chat about some personal experience, like what I'm seeing at the clinic, and also some examples to share with our listeners.
Okay, so why are people going for, you know, I guess, non-traditional treatments?
Well, presumably, you know, we're all feeling the squeeze at the moment from a cost of living point of view, and people probably have the assumption that it's going to cost them an arm and a leg to go to the vet, so they're just not going to do it or going to try something else first, or what the neighbour heard or what the forum said or what, you know, whatever. And I just would encourage people to seek advice from reliable sources. For example, like our nurses are always answering the phones and they can absolutely give advice to owners. You know, they're very much trained to triage and to offer, to a certain extent, advice over the phone that they're capable and able to do. But they're also very, very good at recognising when something needs to be seen by the vet. You know, if they think that something doesn't need to be seen, well, they'll tell you it doesn't need to be seen, or they'll say monitor it, or they'll give you advice of things that you can get over the counter, or you might have at home, or you can get from the pet shop. But, you know, if you're calling the vets for advice, the nurses are much more reliable than the forum or the next door neighbour or the mother's cousin's brother's next door neighbour's football team's coach. You know, just give them a call and they'll help you if they can. And if they think your pet needs assistance, they'll recommend a vet check.
Excellent. Well, that is good advice. So if in doubt, call a vet.
Yes, and I'll certainly go through some examples.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we've got Sean from Katara on the line. Hi, Sean. How can we help you today?
Oh, hi. How you going? Yeah, I listen to Pet Chat as much as I can, but I've never heard anything about I give my dog this Simparco Trio, you know, for flea ticks and heartworm and all that.
Yes.
And I came across something that said it wasn't, you know, it's not really very good for your dog. And I was just wondering, is that a thing, or is it okay to give it to him?
Yeah, look, Sean, great question. Can I say thank you for calling and thank you for seeking advice? I'm not sure if you were just listening, but, you know, vets and nurses and clinics are always there for questions exactly like this.
Yeah.
You are correct that there is, well, pretty much all products, I would say, all medicines have side effects.
Yeah, I'm aware
and
of that.
Adverse effects.
Yeah.
I personally think Simparica Trio is exceptionally good. It does its job exceptionally well, and it's what I use on my dogs monthly.
Okay.
Yeah. It does.
Well, my dog's three. I've had him since he was 4 months old, and, you know, I guess there's no, you know, it's like noticeable side effects, but I was just curious. I came
across
something that said that, you know, it wasn't that great for him, and I was looking for a natural alternative, you know.
Yeah, but, look, yes. I mean, I think all of us would prefer not to use medication if we can. In this particular case, particularly with ticks in Newcastle, we're seeing tick paralysis cases even through
I live up at Black Butte Reserve too.
So look, even through winter, you know, we're seeing it as an issue. And I would certainly say that your monthly preventatives are much less toxic, much lower risk of adverse effects, and much less expensive than a tick paralysis treatment or a heartworm treatment or anemia due to intestinal worms. So
I kind of thought of that, yeah.
I couldn't recommend it highly enough.
Okay. Well, that's really all I wanted to say. And love your show. And thank you very much for taking my call.
No worries. Thanks for the call, Sean.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, Sean. Bye. And we've got David from Western on the line. Hi, David. You've got a tip for cleaning dog's feet.
Teeth, dog's teeth.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
must have
wonderful.
I'm sorry if there's a bit of traffic noise. I was in a cafe and it was noisy in there.
That's all right.
I've come outside, but I'm sitting in the traffic's going past. Okay, you know that bit of that big stalk on the broccoli that you cut off and throw away?
Yeah.
Yeah. I cut that into medallions about 5 or 6 millimetres thick.
Yeah.
I soak it for 24 hours in the fridge in beef stock and then I freeze them.
Okay.
And my dog loves them. And they're nice and crunchy and chewy, and it's a good natural teeth cleaner.
Look, I think that's a great frozen treat for the dogs. As you say, it'll keep them entertained for a bit, give them something to chew. Have your dogs previously had dental work or needed dental cleaning or anything, David?
No, she's 8 years old, or 8 years old in a week. And she's always had good teeth. I give her lots of different things to chew. But I found out about the broccoli about a month, 6 or 7 months ago, and I've been giving it to her regularly, and she just loves it.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I'm sure our callers appreciate it, David.
She's just about to have a bit of watermelon.
Thanks for the call, David.
Yeah, she's spoiled.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. We've got Jenny from Fern Bay on the line. Hi, Jenny, are you there?
Yeah.
Yes, how can we help you?
Did the guy ever tell you what I'm talking about?
You've got a cavoodle female, when left alone, grabs avocados and nests on them.
Oh, it's my daughter in Wollongong. I said I'd ring Pet Chat and see.
Oh, good on you, Jenny. Tell me more.
Well, that's really it. If she's left inside downstairs, they're not out for the day, they're out for a couple of hours or something, and if they mistakenly leave a chair out near the table, she jumps up, gets the avocado, takes it back to her bed and sits on them.
Look, I'll give you advice, but first I'm going to laugh, Jenny. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
So is it only the avocados she wants?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. My daughter's just said the avocados, so, yeah.
Okay. I mean, my first advice and the easiest fix is to put the avocados somewhere else. So avocado seeds can cause quite significant issues with dogs, both from a gastrointestinal obstruction point of view and also a toxicity point of view. So we certainly wouldn't want her to unintentionally start chewing on the avocado and chew on the seed or swallow it, because that could be quite nasty. So first things first, I'd definitely remove them if possible, or make sure she can't get up on the bench. So nests on them, as in she just likes taking them to her bed and sitting with them. Is that correct?
Nope, is she there? Hang on.
Yeah.
My fault, I lost you.
Sorry, Jenny. So she takes them back to her bed and sits with them. Is that correct?
Sits on them.
Sits on them.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's only when the owners are gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Has she always done it?
No, not forever and ever, you know.
Is it a sort of a newish thing, do you think?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
When the avocados are in season.
Yeah, okay. I assume it's a comfort thing for her, like she's wanting to feel maybe safer or secure, or she's a bit anxious that her owners are away, so she's trying to get something that makes her feel more comfortable. Have you got anything to say there, Cheryl?
Jenny, do you know if she takes anything else and lays with it or
you know? I don't know. I want to ask another question before you hang up, you know.
Go for it.
For me, you know.
Go for it.
Oh, okay. Now, I've got a 7-year-old Maltese Shih Tzu cross.
Yes.
And she's my assistant's dog, which is marvellous. I give her a Simparica flea and tick tablet once a month.
Yes.
But it hasn't got the heartworm in it. But we get the needle from the vet for heartworm.
Yes.
Heartworm for the 12 months.
Yes.
Now, what's the better way to go? To get a 3-prong tablet, or I have the heartworm tablet because I did have a dog in the past who had heartworm.
Yeah,
I'm very, very worried about that. You
yes,
know?
So the combination that you're choosing, Jenny, is also exceptional. Okay,
yeah.
So there are two things that can kill dogs in terms of parasites. One is heartworm, which we can give an annual vaccine for. And the other one is actually ticks, which we also have an annual injection for. So you can give an annual injection for both if you choose to do so. And then you wouldn't have to do the Simparica monthly. Yeah, now, the benefit of...
About,
sorry?
Fleas?
Yeah, so fleas and ticks is together with the injection.
Okay. Right,
so the benefit of doing the injection and why we often suggest to people to do the injection is it doesn't matter, you know, with the monthly chew, you have to be the day it's due is the day you give it or they're not protected. Whereas if you choose the injection, you don't have to think about it for 12 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I did the heartworm injection, you know.
Yes, and that's... That's traditionally why people have done it. And we've only had the all-in-one monthlies for probably 10 years or so. But the heartworm injection has been around for decades and is extremely effective. You're choosing a great product there. So if you like the annual injection, you can actually choose an annual injection for the fleas and ticks as well.
Yeah.
And then
Which
you wouldn't...
Wouldn't do that until the beginning of next year when she's due for a heartworm.
Whatever works for you, but from a convenience point of view, it may well work in nicely to do them both at the same time.
Yeah, okay, yeah, righto. Okay, thank you very much for all that.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Jenny.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM. And we've got Susie from Terralba on the line. Susie, you want to know why your dogs eat dirt?
Yes. I've got two small dogs and... They both love eating dirt.
Is it an all-year-round thing, Susie? Is it just sometimes?
Yeah, no, it seems to be all-year-round,
And are they digging in the garden, in the grass, making holes? Like, when are they?
In the grass, grass. It's not in the garden, but they'll come out and they'll... I thought they were sort of chewing at the roots of the grass or something, but no, they go further and they eat the dirt.
Okay.
So they've been doing it for years.
Okay.
But I don't know why.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think all dogs do gross things. Eating dirt's probably one of them that's less gross, I guess, to be fair. Most of them aren't eating it because they like the taste of it. Like, it's not like they're getting, you know, nutrition from it. But I think often from a textural point of view, they're exploring with their mouth. Sometimes, depending on the season, there can be bugs and larvae under the dirt, under the grass that they can smell. So they're trying to get to those. I know my dog at the moment is digging more holes than usual in the grass, and I do wonder whether he can smell something under the grass. So that's sort of a common one. And then the other most common one would be if they haven't had the physical and emotional and mental stimulation exercise that they need. It's like a, it's like a an energy expenditure for them. You know, I'm a bit pent up and I need to expend some energy, and I can't go for a walk right now or a play, so I'm going to do some digging and eating.
Yeah, because like they live inside, and when we go outside, they will quite often just dig in the dirt with their mouths.
Yeah, as you say, yeah, it's relatively a common thing that they can do.
Right.
Cheryl, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you've covered it really well. And often when you've got two dogs, if one dog starts that behaviour, the other dog will usually copy. So often it's one dog starts it and the other one joins in.
All right. Okay, yeah, because they have certain patches where they prefer to do it.
Yeah, it's certainly unlikely to be harming them in any way, Susie. I mean, you can. There's very, very rare metabolic things that can result show up as dogs eating dirt, but to be fair, I'm not sure if I've ever actually seen one. So it's much more likely to be they're smelling something, or they like the feel of it, or they're just a bit bored.
Yeah, displacement.
Yes.
Thank you for your call, Susie.
Very
appreciate
good.
It. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. And we've got Alan from Clarencetown on the line. Now, Alan, you want to ask a medication question?
Yes, hi. Firstly, thanks heaps for another great pet chat. It's really good.
Oh, I appreciate it, Alan.
Congratulations on being a Labrador owner. I have a six-year-old lab and I'm certainly enjoying all the snow around the house. But they are beautiful dogs.
I'm sure you could share lots of stories I wouldn't want to hear, Alan.
Oh, yeah. They're certainly characters and they love you.
Yeah.
My question, again, is about Perico Trio.
Yes.
Which I give her every month.
Yes.
But one thing I've never really been able to fathom, is it a calendar month or is it a four-week month?
That is an exceptionally good question, Alan. I tend to suggest to people a calendar month because that makes it easier from a compliance point of view for clients. Okay.
Right.
So per calendar month is what I recommend and it's what I do. Okay. Now, if you actually read the very large insert in Simparica Trio, the coverage is actually a 35-day period. Okay. So by giving it in every 30 days for the month or every 31 days, you are within that 35 days. So,
because I have been doing it on the second of every month, such as when we started.
Yes.
So I'll keep doing that then.
Yes, that's what I would do. And certainly, yeah, just make sure you got it in your calendar and make sure it gets done every month.
Yes, unfortunately, they removed the stickers from the packs that I used to stick in the diary.
Yes.
I have to physically write it in the diary now, which is a bit of a pain. But one of those things.
Yeah, yes, you're right. They did used to have the stickers, but I guess these days everyone tends to use virtual. A lot of people use virtual calendars. But, yeah, a good old pen and paper works just as well.
For sure.
Thanks for your question, Alan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we've got Carmel from Lochinvar on the line. Hi, Carmel. You've got a 13-year-old Maltese that pants heavily in the car.
Yeah, he freaks. He loves going out, but as soon as you get him in the car and start driving, and I mean, these aren't big distances. These are just, you know, it's like he's really freaking out.
Has he always been that way in the car, Carmel?
Yeah, he has.
Okay. And have you had him since a puppy?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Would you say he's getting worse or is he staying about the same?
Well, I don't know because he's got Cushing's disease as well. Yeah, so I'm guessing we lost his companion last year. We had a 15-year-old, 7 months, and he was a Jack Russell. And he never got anxious in the car, but this one's always suffered anxiety in the car.
Yeah, okay. Have you ever tried any medication from your vets?
Well, I have got medication like Calma and Trazodone, but I'm not sure what they're sort of, you know, like I'm a little bit reluctant to use them because I don't want them to make him dopey because, like, if I want to take him for a walk, I just want him to be able to settle in the car.
Yeah, okay.
He's only 10 kilos. Well, he's getting big for a Maltese, I suppose.
Look, if he's always done that, Carmel, it's probably that he has some anxiety associated with the car. If he's always done it, it would certainly be hard to train him out of that many years of practice now. But I would definitely recommend there are some great medications, including the two that you've mentioned, that potentially are appropriate for him. Okay.
And gabapentin, I've got that too.
Yeah, so what I would encourage you to do, definitely don't use them all together, okay? Right. But I would like you to phone your local vet who looks after him and just next time you're in, have a chat to them about these medications and which ones you can try because all of them can be used, definitely not all at the same time.
No, I understand that.
But your vet may be able to give you like a starting dose and then a slightly higher dose and a slightly lower dose and when to give it and how often to give it and the time frame and what to look for and all those kinds of things because I'm sure he would benefit from something to help with his anxiety, particularly now that he's got Cushing's, you know, we want to sort of look after him as much as we can. So I'm quite confident you'd be able to find something that works for him.
And with these medications, do you give it to them like an hour before the car?
They're all slightly different, Carmel, but as a general rule, if we're using a situational medication for anxiety, it's usually given about 60 to 120 minutes before you need it, so 1 to 2 hours.
But as I said, we're not travelling far. I mean, tomorrow we'll go to Stockton for a haircut and he'll pant in the car and it's just like, really? Just stop.
Yeah.
There's no need. It's like, you know, I'm trying to get you out and just get away from the area. And
Whilst you understand that logic, he doesn't.
Yeah,
you know, he's just decided he hates the car. And, you know, it's like a kid with a phobia of heights. You can try and explain it, but the emotional part of their brain doesn't really acknowledge, the logical part's like, I get it, but the emotional part's like, I still don't like it. I agree, you know, you're just trying to get him out and about and you're just trying to help him enjoy things, but he doesn't understand that. I think having a chat with your vet about which of those medications to try and when and how and all that sort of thing would be helpful for him, I think.
All right, so maybe speak to the vet and see what she says.
Definitely, yeah.
All right, okay.
Thanks so much, Carmel.
Good
Thank
luck.
You so much.
Thank you, bye. Okay, we'll just check our pet of the week and we've got a couple of pairs,
pets,
really.
Yes.
We're going to start with Bazza and Cleo.
Oh, this cute combination. So they're a bonded pair, these two, both two-year-olds. One is a Kelpie Bull Terrier cross and the other is a Kelpie Cattle Dog cross. They both look medium in size and they're little... script describing them, they sound really lovely pets. A great fit for a family, sweet, affectionate, happy to be by themselves for the day in the backyard, love being with their people, love a play, love a walk, happy with other dogs, happy with cats, older kids just because they haven't been tested with younger kids. Requires ongoing training as you would fully expect with young dogs, but if you're an active family looking for you know, double the love really, I'd
Bazza and Cleo.
Bazza and Cleo.
Good night.
Cute combo.
They are. All right, next we've got Dylan.
Dylan is a 5-month-old white kitten. And at 5 months old, you know, great age, playful, inquisitive, up for some interacting and some wrestling and playing, and then, you know, you turn around 5 seconds later and they're comatose fast asleep. Very cute.
Very cute.
Would be a great fit for most families. And Dylan also has a brother, Drew, who looks identical to him, so both white cats, and they would happily go together. So, again, if you're after a you know, two for one, double the love, then these might be one or two for you.
Yeah.
But they are very cute.
They are very cute. You can check out their pictures. They're on our website, 2NURFM.com.au, and you go to the lifestyle programs and, yeah, you can chat to, not chat to the cats, but you can sort of look
meet
at the
and greet.
Pictures and, yeah, see if you're interested in them. Okay. And Fiona, you wanted to finish off by explaining more about I guess what people tend to do when they don't want to go to the vets.
Yeah, just a couple of examples that came to mind when we were talking about this before, Amanda, about a third of owners seeking home remedies or online information rather than heading into their vets. So I had a dog a few years ago who presented for a sore eye, and the owner had some eye cream at home and that he'd had for a previous eye condition, and he'd been putting the eye cream in the dog's eye, but it hadn't been getting better. Long story short, the eye medication that this owner had at home was the very, very worst cream that he could be putting in the dog's eye, because the dog had an ulcer in its eye and the cream that the owner was using was making the ulcer worse rather than better. So as a result, by the time I saw the dog, the ulcer was very severe and took a large number of weeks and a surgical procedure to fix. Whereas if the owner had presented when the dog initially had a sore eye, I would have assessed the eye, assessed that it had an ulcer, and given him the right cream. So, you know, if you've got a stash of old pet medication in the cupboard somewhere, part one, throw out everything that's expired. Part two, if you're not sure when to use it or how to use it or why to use it, please don't use it. And part three, if you do think you have something appropriate, just phone the clinic. Phone the clinic, speak to the nurses. They may be very able to help you, but if they can't or if they think your pet needs to see the vet, then definitely do.
Yeah.
And then the other example I thought was just skin issues that we have. So skin issues can be quite acute and very short duration and very easy fix, or they can be chronic with lots of problems and very problematic. So certainly if you've got a dog or a cat for that matter with a short-term skin issue, it's going to be quicker to heal, it's going to cost you less, and it's going to get better more quickly. If you wait weeks or months, you're going to get a more expensive treatment, you're going to have a longer treatment, and you're going to need more vet visits. So if in doubt, call your vet.
Yep. There you go. That's the lesson for today. If in doubt, call your vet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much, Cheryl and Dr. Fiona.
Thanks, Amanda.
We'll catch you soon. Pet Chat next week on 2NURFM, same time, same place.